Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
Let's get this party started. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of September 27th and 28th. Thanks for joining us this morning from 7 to 8 a.m. You're tuned into 50,000 mega far-reaching watts of the Rack and Fin Radio message, 97.3 ESPN FM, streaming live 97.3 ESPN.com. Download the 97.3 app or go to Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or the other platforms to get the Rack and Fin Radio message. The podcast usually posted Sunday afternoons or Sunday. Big event going on as we speak, starting today and tomorrow at Wells. Let's get this party started again. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of September 27th and 28th. Good morning, tuning in. It's us at 7 to 8 a.m. 50,000 mega far reaching watts of the Rack and Fin Radio message on 97.3 ESPN FM. We're streaming live, 97.3 ESPN.com. Download the 97.3 app or go to Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for the podcast, which is usually posted Saturday afternoons or sometimes Sunday. Speaking of Saturday and Sunday, great event going on today and tomorrow. Tip Seaman Park on Route 9 in Tuckerton is the 43rd annual Old Time Barnegat Bay Decoy and Gunning Show, one of the most popular outdoor events of its kind in the state, if not the region. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people get there. Again, a super two-day event. Joining us on the line right now to open up the show for a quick few minutes is Amanda Truhan. She's the chief park naturalist, Ocean County Parks. And this is right there, Southern Ocean County. And you've got the beautiful Pacon Lake there, which is loaded with pickerel and bass. But I digress. Amanda, how you doing? I'm too excited. Great to have
Good
you
morning.
On Rack. Great to have you on Rack and Fin. This event looks great. I understand you have over 100, 120, 125 exhibitors, all sorts of things going on. We have a few minutes. Let it roll, young lady. Go.
Yeah, so we have over 120 vendors who are focusing on perpetuating the and celebrating the Barnegat Bay traditions of duck hunting and waterfowling and other attributes of the bay life, just living and perpetuating the history of this region. They will be having items such as decorative and working decoys, wildlife art and photo, outdoor clothing, fishing supplies, antiques that you can purchase, hunting guide services, and so much more. We're going to be having environmental nonprofits here to be able to discuss the importance of our region. And then we have tons and tons of contests. We will be having back will be the Delmarva Dock Dogs. They will be right off Route 9 having their competitions. But inside the park, we will be having tons of things for everybody to do. We have a skeet shooting competition for ages 10 and 10 to 15. That's only $5. 16 and up is $10. That's both days. We will be having retriever competitions. You could get your kicks out of watching the puppies try and find their bumpers. And then the novice and the adult competitions, advanced competitions. Duck calling. We'll have duck calling on our stage, duck and goose. But the big gem is the state championship calling competition.
Yeah.
If you win that one, then it's a $20 charge. The duck and goose is only $10. But if you win that one, you get to represent the state of New Jersey in Stuttgart in November, and you also receive a $350 gift card prize from New Jersey Waterfowlers.
There you go.
And then we've got lots of decoy competitions. So we have decorative competitions, but we also have working decoys, over 50 of them in our decoy tents, where you get to see Barnegat Bay and traditional and some of the fancier ones, shorebird, Delaware River, miniatures, working fish decoys. All of that is both days in the park under our tents. And then just to get into the history, we do have a presentation tent where we're going to be on Saturday celebrating Harry M. Shores. There's going to be a display on him. And then on Sunday, Rube Corliss, both well-known hunters and carvers of the region.
Yep.
Sunday, there will be a lecture on Rube at 1 p.m., and then movies and historical interpretations all throughout the day there. And then we will also be having we've got so much going on. You can't do it all.
You're going to be there. You're going to be there all day, and they have a great
all day.
Great selection of food.
7 a.m. Yep, we 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. and then Sunday 7 a.m. to 4. We do have our awards at 3:30, so you get to see all the winners of all the competitions. But both days we're going to be having in our family fun tent make and take decoy crafts and soap carvings and flatty demonstrations and decoy carvings and basket weavers. And then there's music all day. The local nonprofits, the churches, and the firehouses all are sponsoring food, so there's tons to eat. archery. You
she could said that for my she said that for my benefit, people.
Yes, lots of goodies.
It's a free event. And, Amanda, there's plenty, there's free parking, but please go, we're up against Hardbreak, please go into the shuttle service.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so we'll have shuttle bus pickups at Freedom Fields, County Park, Pinelands High School, and then across the street at Tucker and Seaport, and they will shuttle you throughout the day from, I think it's 8:30 to 5, because we don't have any actual parking inside the park itself. That's just for handicap and for vendors, but please utilize some of the local parking, and we will get you to and from, no problem.
Okay, listen, today and tomorrow, 43rd anniversary, Jesus, the old-time Barnegat Bay Decoy and Gunning Show. Hours are today, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., Sunday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., and it is free. It's a free event to get in. You'll have a great time. You're going to figure on spending the day. Amanda, thanks for joining us. Hope to see you out there at Wells Mills Park. I'm going to try to get on one of those fishing kayaks.
Oh, absolutely. Come check us out.
To make sure you have a lot of life rings there, because I have no sense of balance. I'll see you at the show later today or tomorrow. You take care.
Perfect. Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, we're jammed. Coming up, we have sea bass. Coming up, we have bear. Coming up, we have chunking tuna. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
College Football Saturday on ESPN Radio.
This is the best rock and roll.
Sixth-ranked Oregon travels to Happy Valley to face number 3 Penn State in the Whiteout game.
We've played in good environments before. They've described it as a good one.
It's College Football Saturday on 97.3 ESPN.
College Football Saturday, brought to you by First Bank of Sea Isle City.
Coverage begins at 7 p.m.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Here we go, look out below, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We got September 27th and 28th. An early, early, early Happy New Year in the parallel universe of Rack and Fin Radio. We know when a season opens or reopens, indeed calls for a New Year celebration. Reopening of the sea bass season, October 1st. There are so many sea bass out there, even Tom P. can catch a limit. Join us on the line right now, very special as we always talk sea bass and Todd with none other than Peter Clark, biologist, DEP Marines, Bureau of Marine Fisheries, is also New Jersey's artificial reef coordinator, the best artificial reef system in the universe. And we're talking sea bass. Oh, man, and he's going to give us a couple of reefs that he says will be prime in the early season. And numbers, and Pete, like you said, there are sea bass everywhere. How you doing, little brother?
I'm good. How are you, Tom?
Fired up for sea bass, fired up for squirrels, fired up for everything.
Squirrels, that's good.
I'm a squirrel cacciatore, man. That's my thing. Well, Pete, the sea bass, some of the charter captains I told you, party boat captains, can't get to the porgies because of the sea bass. Pete, their numbers are how rebuilt?
How rebuilt? So, you know, the last time we talked, I guess it was, what, May or something like that, we were going through another stock assessment. So we were using 24 info. We are at 237% or 2.37 times our target, our spawning stock biomass target. So anyway, we finally got the updated assessment for 25 in August, and we're at 2.84 times the target, which is, you know, I mean, we're almost three times what we need it to be for our target spawning stock biomass, which means they're everywhere.
My
mom's catching them in the river, you know, like, I'm joking, but seriously, they're catching them on the jetties. They're everywhere, Tom. And right now, I just, you know, finished up our fluke season here, and it's for us up in the northern part of the state. It is over, but there are jumbo sea bass from 30 feet to 110 feet, probably even further. That's all I covered. I only covered from 30 to 110 feet deep of water, you know, from looking for fluke, which was tough. But, boy, God, the sea bass are everywhere, and they're beautiful. I mean, we have these jumbos inshore right now.
Pete, a couple of party boats that I handle for the Philly Daily News are saying, Tom, these are, I said, are they just keepers? What, 14? No. How about no. 3 to 4 up to 5? I said, what? And they're getting, they're in shallower water, so they're getting released okay, but Pete, I'll tell you, that's a which begs the question. I know I'm going to get hit with some texts and phone calls over after this. How does this augur for an increase in either bag limit or season extension or what when you have so many sea bass rebuilt to that high level?
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a minute, Tom. So every 2 years, we're in a two-year regulatory specification process now with the ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council, which means we haven't changed our regulations for 2 years, and we're going to make a change this winter for our 26-27, actually for all three species, summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass. They all are they're managed separately, but they're the modeling used to set specifications and to estimate harvest levels is in concert together. So what happens is this. We're going to make 2 year regulations for all three species this winter. For sea bass, it looks like we're probably, because of, you know, again, we've been talking about the last 4 or 5 years, we've been talking about the priority matrix, the recreational demand models, recreational reform, things like that, right? So all part of all that means that we use this very intricate and, I believe, accurate model. We weren't really happy with it at first, but it, boy, I'll tell you, the results of it have shown a higher level of accuracy. So so I'm a believer, right? I was very skeptical, like I said, at first, but I think I
remember
am
that,
a believer now. And so this model is probably going to allow for a 20% increase in sea bass because we're so high when you – because sea bass population is so high right now, when we put it into our priority matrix decision table, it shows that we're allowed a 20% increase. Now, for summer flounder, our RHL is also increasing, but because we're only at 83% of our target, it won't allow for a liberalization in our regulations for the next 2 years. That's likely. It likely won't allow for a liberalization, but with that said, it doesn't mean that we're necessarily stuck with, or we're not necessarily, we don't have to necessarily use the same regulations that we've had for the last couple of years.
Okay.
I think we're going to have flexibility in aiming for our current harvest level, but using a conservational equivalency measure where we could tweak our summer flounder a little bit, all right? So it's possible we could go back to a slot fish. It's possible we could go to a different bag limit. It's possible we could do some, you know, some movement on summer flounder.
But there is some flexibility, Pete. Thank God.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think folks liked the concept of a slot for summer flounder. You know, and look, our council is doing a great job of vetting all of the comments through our public and finding out what they really prefer as far as measures go for all three of those, for every species that we manage, to be perfectly honest, including the, you know, I won't even mention the words right now, but for that other, the big, the, you know, the line-sided one that that we're going to be up against, you know, they're doing a fantastic job managing all these things for New Jersey, in my opinion. They're really taking everybody's opinions and comments and, you know, ideas to heart.
Join us on a Rack and Fin line this morning. Always highly esteemed guest, as I affectionately refer to him as Admiral Peter Clark. Pete is a biologist, DEP's Bureau of Marine Fisheries, and he's also the New Jersey Artificial Reef Coordinator. Okay, Pete, let's talk sea bass, man. We have a few minutes of sea bass growth rates. Jersey waters, they're in and out. They migrate east to west or whoever. Population is steady. It's you know, advanced to this stage. Fishing looks great. Primary cover for sea bass in the early going.
Everywhere.
Easy enough. I knew that was coming.
Look, and I told you, I've been everywhere from 30 feet to 100 feet, mostly up here, you know, Ocean, Monmouth County, and I'm hearing the same thing down south.
Oh yeah,
they're everywhere. Every little crumble, rock pile, inshore, offshore, you name it, they're there. Guys fishing down on Little Leg and AC are doing really well with Jumbo. And I told you, I love AC Reef. That reef, there's very few reefs where you can go from 50 foot to 100 foot bottom contour. Not talking about, you know, the awesome material that we have on it, but bottom contour, 50 to 100 plus foot on one reef. It's awesome. Awesome reef. Okay. You know, we've got great rock piles on Little Leg for folks to go bang away at these things. And it's, look, hey, there's a lot of sand eels around, okay? There's a lot of small baits. You've got your glass minnows are out there. You know, you've got some small baits, and you know what that means. Take out, get the epoxies going. You should be epoxy slow pitch jigging for these things and just having a, at 10 fish, yeah, you're going to be done in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, Pete, there's I'm still I'm from the old school. I'm still an Ava guy, but I'm looking at some of these. What's that? Major Craft, some of the tungsten jigs and the and the hoagie epoxies. Thing is, Pete, we get that strong current down there. Sometimes you know you got to get some meaner. That's why the epoxy the tungsten ones, the smaller bait, they great sink rate.
Yeah, those are awesome. Yeah, you're absolutely right. For some of that deeper stuff, you're
Pete, another thing, too, I noticed through the years doing this, this time of year especially, those sea bass, they're above, on top or right above the structure. they're just, you don't have to get to the bottom. And when you get to the bottom, invariably you're going to snap. You're going to, if you want a bay fish, that's fine. I like the green crab chunks. I like the squid. I like it all. I'm a meat man. But Pete, but when they're above that cover, prime time to jig.
Yeah, we always have a couple of guys meat fishing, whether, you know, clams or, you know, we'll have a couple guys clams, couple on the squid, couple guys with the tungstens, the Avas, the epoxies, you know. I honestly do like an Ava, like even a 007 with these sand eels, or if you have to put a little bit more weight on there, the 47s, the 27s. Yep. But boy, that teaser up top, man. And I've been using, you know, there's a whole bunch of, God, you know, name it. There's so many different grubs that you can put on that top hook for your teaser, and that's.
Hey, Captain Willie on a Dauntless swears by, his patron swears by a gulp shrimp or a gulp sand eel. That's it.
Gulp shrimp, gulp sand eels. I started using those rubber, I mean, like the freshwater stuff, because they hold up so well, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Because those things, they're just reaction bites. Like you said, they're 20 feet high on all this structure. Mm-hmm. You just drop down, come up a few cranks, and start whaling them.
Pete, I mean, the reproductive rate must be incredible, because I know this is an incredible sea bass season back in the spring. And the angling pressure doesn't seem to be impacting them, correct?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we've had so many, and science is tough, right? It's you can predict a lot of things, but it's hard to know in reality and in the wild what's going to happen. And what we've seen happen with sea bass is we've had, you know, multiple years of very high recruitment rates.
Yeah.
And as these fish move into their adult stages of life, we're still at but three times our targets. So these fish are just spawning, prolific spawners. Their growth rates are tremendous. You know, by the time that they're 12 and a half inches, they're already 3-4 years old. And we're talking about massive amounts of jumbo humphead sea bass out there. Jumbo females, just, you know, amazing.
Well, Pete, question two is, you see when you get these, sorry about that little glitch here, but you see what, for example, fluking, guys make some drifts, they can technically, okay, bing, 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 pick it apart, away you go. Fluke aren't going to back there for a while. The sea bass, the marine environment abhors a vacuum. You pound on a wreck. The next day, it seems there's sea bass right back in there again.
Yeah.
It's amazing how they come. Wow, they come zero right in the unoccupied spaces.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. These things are wheeling around all these pieces, right? So, you know, we do a lot of research on our reefs, Tom, and we find that of course, you're catching a lot of sea bass on the reefs. But when you get off the reefs, and we're using these ventless traps, right? So when we set these things a mile from the reef, between pieces, let's say, between right. the natural structure and the reef, they are loaded 50, 60, 75 sea bass in one trap.
Whoa.
And what that tells us is that they're, you know, they're migrating. I say they're wheeling around these, this area, but they're migrating from piece to piece to piece, and they're just foraging, unrelentless foragers. And, I don't know if you've ever watched sea bass, but boy, they are voracious.
Clark, I wish somehow they can gang up and get some of these spiny dogs. chew the hell out of these things. Pete Clark, yeah. Bureau of Marine Fisheries, Artificial Reef Corner. Pete, we have a couple of minutes left. Go, you mentioned Little Egg Reef, one of my favorites. You mentioned the Great Atlantic City Reef. Two or three more top reefs, in your opinion, for sea bass in October. Go!
All right. Cape May Reef has got some recent deployments on it. Go check them out. We put a real nice fishing boat down there. That thing's going to be loaded, I think, already. We're fine. That's one of the coolest things, Tom, is there's... We're finding that even these deployments that we drop, within a month, they're loaded with sea bass, right? So all up and down the beach, pick your favorite reef. We've done them on recently on Cape May, on Townsend's.
Townsend's, fantastic.
Yeah, Townsend's has gotten a lot of material recently. Those guys down at the Strathmere Fishing Environmental Club have been, They're going gangbusters down there.
Fantastic, yeah.
Deployments. So, the guys fishing out of Little Egg, don't pass up AC. Take the ride, guys. It's worth it. I'm telling you, start inshore, work your way offshore to, like, the Jet Trader out in that deep water. Did I ever tell you, Tom, we've been catching octopus down in that deeper water on AC? Like, that's the only reef that we catch stuff like that.
Pulpa, deep water stuff. Pulpa, right? I like that more at Christmas even than calamod. Oh my God!
The Italian guys with
Hey Pete, real fast. I know a couple of guys, again, accomplished captains, great guys. I like to share the knowledge. They like the sisters, the Garden State North and Garden State South sisters.
Oh, dude, yeah. And we don't talk about them a lot. You get in trouble with the locals when you talk about those.
Sorry.
They're fantastic. You know, they don't get a ton of pressure, right? So especially for my next favorite thing coming up, and you know what that is.
Oh yeah.
Those two reefs are fantastic. So yeah, if you're looking to get away from the crowds, you know, venture up in the Garden State North and South. They're awesome reefs. Absolutely amazing. Less pressure, great structure. You're going to find sea bass. And on those reefs, you can take drifts through there. And you're
it's good drifting.
Mashing them.
Excellent. Admiral Clark was referring to 1116, and we'll leave it at that. Admiral Peter Clark, thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin. You have a great October season. I hope to get on a Mad Hatter one of these days, bro.
I'd like to have you, Tom.
Hey, listen, I bring the food. You put me on the fish, I bring the food. We eat like kings.
Well, we fish first, and then we'll eat after we get the boat.
Fish, as the late John Cole said, great book, fishing comes first. That's it.
Fishing comes first.
Okay, you take care, Pete. Thanks for joining us. I'm too excited. I'm babbling. We'll see you later, brother. See ya. Peter Clark, always a great guest. Hell of a fisherman, man. Walks the walk, talks the talk, does it all. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
This is South Jersey's official home for Philadelphia Eagles football. Tomorrow, the Birds head down to Tampa to take on the Buccaneers in Week 4.
First and 10, Bucs up across the 40. Mayfield back, dancing around. He is sacked back at the 30.
Pre-game coverage begins at noon. Merrill and Mike call all the action starting at 1 p.m. This is where the Super Bowl champs play. 97.3 ESPN, South Jersey's official Eagles station. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of September 27th and 28th. Okay, people, everybody's all keyed up. So am I. I know the deer season's going on now. 29 DMZs around the state. Statewide deer season opens October 4th, but hey, check it out. Let's not forget the Bruins. Jersey has some, for its size, some of the best black bear hunting in the Northeast, if not the nation. That season is going to open up October 13th and run through the 18th. October 13th to 18th is archery only. October 16th to 18th incorporated in there is a muzzle loader as well. Now, the shotgun season, slugs only, December 8th to 13th, that coincides with the, it used to be 6-day buck season, firearm season, now you have whatever in there. But it's, we've been seeing a good amount of bears in our travels, northern part of the state. And I'll tell you, our Bruins are big, our Bruins are badass. Joining us online right now to give us a lowdown on the upcoming season is John Oxley, New Jersey DEP's, Fish and Wildlife's Bureau Chief of Wildlife Management. Mr. Oxley, how you doing? Great to see you. Not to see you again. Great to talk to you again. We met back in April at the Sportsman's Jamboree here in Gloucester County. Indeed an honor, man. You're a pretty cool guy.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me today.
I'll just tell you, just right off the bat, before we get into the bear thing, your wildlife crew, from the small game to what you guys have, you have a tremendous, I have to, for lack of a better term, army under you, man.
Yeah, they're fantastic. It's a great group to work with. Just the enthusiasm and dedication is amazing.
Well, I always say the best in the nation, and like the one guy says, you know, prove me wrong. And here we go. Okay, Mr. Roxy, let's get right to the 2023 harvest was 493, and 24 was 473, down 20 Bruins. That's, you know, the vagaries, you know, weather, et cetera, all coming in there. What is in the deer, the bear hunting, rather, areas, 1 through 4, 1 through 5, what's the approximate population?
Yeah, so the conservative estimate is between 2,000 and 2,500 bears. And as you pointed out, that's just the research trapping that we do to help establish that is only zones 1 through 4. So we're not trapping in 5. We're also not even trapping in the northeast part of the state where we know there's a lot of bears up in that area. And not to mention the rest of the state in the south. You know, they're in all 21 counties at this point. But that 2,000 to 2,500 bears is a very conservative number just in zones 1 through 4.
Yeah, you see what's happening, for example, in Florida. Maryland has a hunt. West Virginia are seeing bears. Now Texas, oh, my God. Here, fifth smallest state, most densely populated, we have some of the best bear hunting. I still have friends from Montana. I don't have friends, enemies and acquaintances. Montana calling saying, dude, some of your black bears are bigger than our grizzlies.
Yeah, I know you touched on it when you first opened up, but what I realized doing a little bit of research that we have hunters from 35 different states that come to New Jersey.
There you go.
Including Alaska to hunt, you know, our black bear.
Jim, now the health, overall health of the bear population. Are there any instances or any Bruin-born diseases, anything like that? You always hear about deer, EHD, God forbid, chronic waste disease. Bruins seem to be pretty pretty resilient.
Yeah, they are. There's a little bit of talk of some encephalitis showing up in some of the bears out west. But even rabies in bears, it's very few and far between. Yeah, they are a healthy species for sure.
Well, we're speaking with Jim Oxley. He is the Bureau Chief, DEP's Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Wildlife Management. Topic is the upcoming bear, Segment A and Segment B, coming up. Oxley, in my calendar, it's already the middle of November. I'm thinking pheasants. But, Jim, the tagging now. You have some great biologists. Shout out to Mikey Medonia and the crew there. The tagging, the purpose of that, you tag X number of bears, and a harvest of tagged bears predicates whether the season stays open or closed, if it exceeds this or exceeds that. What's the dealio?
Right. So, correct. So, if we take that number of 185 bears that we tagged throughout our research trapping seasons, basically, if we get 20% or more of those bears returned to us during segment A, which that happened last year, we were at 22.6% of return. So that the first fallout from that is we close the extension, that 5-day extension that comes after segment B.
Right. Yep. The December. Yep.
Right. And then at any point in time, it could be Monday, if we surpass 30% of those tag bears returned to us, then the hunt stops completely. So they're in check, you know, just so we don't, you know, harvest too many bears.
So in the 400, 350, 400 to 500 range is about maximum, correct?
Yeah, that would be correct.
Mm-hmm. Jim, one thing too, the bears here seem to be, I mean, huge, and the reproductive rates of the sows well above average. I remember seeing a sow with five Cubs in a driveway in southern Sussex County. Yeah, actually, their other car stopped and looking. She's in the middle. Whoever's in the house obviously couldn't get out. But, I mean, our reproductive rates in these Bruins is incredible, way above average. And is that the quality, the habitat, the food? And, again, as crowded and as built up as we are.
Yeah, you're correct. So 2.9 is the fecundity rate and is, you know, one of the highest in the nation. And it is the food. It's the mass that we have available, the skunk cabbage, the acorns, and all that gets supplemented, too, with, you know, unfortunately, some human food available, mm-hmm. too. But, yeah, they get big. As you saw last year, we had that 770-pounder harvested up in Morris County, Kinnelon. So,
yeah, I had a Kinnelon smoke rise here off 23. I had the gentleman on the on Rack and Fin, the hardcore dedicated hunter. He said, Tom, put my time in. He was after that bear for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. It's amazing that somebody else didn't. Well, I guess there was some arguments as to who was laying claim to that bear. But, yeah, ultimately it took a long time.
Jim, the move south, to me, it's the, I call it the below the belt. You have that Trenton to Point Pleasant demarcation and Mercer County, that just massive amount of traffic and humanity and chaos, and every citizen is friggin' angry. Trust me on that one, Oxley. Well, you know, you're in Trenton on occasion.
Yeah,
how do bears filter down through that? I remember it was a couple of years ago, right up in our area by Manahawk and Stafford, there was a bear walking around one of the parking lots in there. I saw a bear down there in Cape May County and Belle Plaine State Forest years ago. Getting through that, is that, I guess that's where, and we've seen scat down there in that Scion area, some of those big blueberry patches and blueberry farms. So bears are in the south, but it seems that maybe that's the purpose there. That block of humanity and traffic and chaos keeps them from really spreading statewide. Because down here we have some beautiful, beautiful bear habitat. I haven't seen better bear habitat like in Central Florida.
Right, correct. Yeah, I know at least I'm from West Stafford over in Gloucester County, and mm-hmm. I know for a couple years there, they were just coming down the Delaware. They were just coming basically down the banks of the river.
Oh, wow.
A little bit of the, yeah. So as far as, you know, they find their way, especially the males, you know, they want to get out there and look for some action.
They're coming down the banks of the river. That could make for some interesting talk when the guys are sailing for the shad.
Oh, yeah, the striped hunters,
Well, Jim, the bear population is steady. It's in check. Chances of it even expanding, even for, God forbid, a hunt stop. We've been having a hunt for, what, another 3-4 years, whatever. I mean, if that happens, where would they go? I mean, you trap a bear, trap and transfer. Is that still even in the cards?
It really isn't. I mean, you know, so the hunt, you know, we have it's an integrated approach to managing the bears in New Jersey, and the regulated hunt is just part of the strategy. So we do have other things that we can do. There's research, there's educational programs, there's promoting the use of, you know, bear resistant garbage containers. We do have some lethal bear damage control. We'll go out and, you know, euthanize if we have to a category one bear. There's non-lethal bear damage controls where we can, you know, hit them with some rubber bullets, stuff like that. But ultimately, you know, the hunt is the best control measure.
Okay, Jim. Mr. Roxley, you talk about Category 1 bears. I guess up there in Vernon, would you consider what happened up there a Category 1 incident?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime there's entry, you know, dwelling or home entry is considered a Category 1. And definitely when it came in contact with the woman, then yes, Category 1 for sure. That bear was acting very strangely before it went into Dollar General. Vernon PD had hit it with a couple of rubber bullets about an hour before because it was in and out of traffic on Route 94. So that same bear ended up, you know, going to the Dollar General, unfortunately. And then, you know, as everybody's seen, Vernon PD had to dispatch that animal.
I'll tell you what, I think that bear was doing, not to make light of it, I think at that Dollar General they had a 2 for $5 on the Tombstone pizzas, the frozen pizzas.
Yeah.
Was after that. Well, Mr. Oxley, before I let you go, how does it, again, weather is the deciding factor. How does it look for this upcoming Segment A hunt? Pretty good?
Yeah, so far, I mean, we're pretty far out, but everything is looking good. Looking at, you know, we'll get a nice cold front come through, cool things off a little bit, and mm-hmm. just keep our fingers crossed there's no rain.
And listen, we have, that's the other thing there, too, because I need some rain to get some water in that flapper and pollen skill and stuff. for the fall trout stocking. Here we go. That's right. I'm playing both sides of the card here. Did you say you're going to tear yourself in half? Well, Jim, thanks for joining us on Rockin' Fin Radio. Listeners, bear permits are still available, $2 online or a licensed issuing agent. We have some of the best bear hunting for our size in the Northeast, if not the entire East Coast. I'm telling you, Jersey bears rule. Jim, thanks so much. Hope to get you on again sometime.
Sure. Thanks, Tom.
You take care. Listen, again, kudos to you and the and that wildlife crew. Just fantastic job, man.
They are great. Yep. Appreciate it.
Take care, Missouri. See you, man.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Jim Moxie, great guy. Met him down there at the Sportsman's Jamboree. Shout out to Tommy Weiss, too. Ty, sorry to get back to you. That was a good program then. I really had a great time. I was running around like a friggin' madman. Oh, it was insane. Okay, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Hey, Oh man, we got some tuna thing coming on. We got Steven. Oh my God, everything is happening. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Unsportsmanlike with Evan Cohen, Chris Canty, and Michelle Smallman.
Jalen Hurts, when he is given the proper amount of time, can be as surgical with his accuracy, with his ball placement, as any quarterback in the National Football League in the drop back passing game. And then, oh, by the way, if he's got to take off and run it on a design quarterback run, he can do that too. He is top five and not five.
Wake up weekday mornings with Unsportsmanlike with Evan Cohen, Chris Canty, and Michelle Smallman on 97.3 ESPN. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Hello, hello. There we go. We got it. Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Final weekend in September, weekend of September 27th and 28th. Hey, you're tuned in 7 to 8 a.m., 50,000 mega far-reaching watts of the Rack and Fin Radio message, 97.3 ESPN FM, streaming live, 97.3ESPN.com. Download the 97.3 ESPN app or go to Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or other platforms for the Rack and Fin Radio message. The podcast is usually posted this afternoon, Saturday, or sometime on Sunday. Hey, man, that tuna bite exploded again, but this has been a crazy year, very sporadic. Yellowfin here, blue, well, they closed the bluefin. That was, as Hutch said, we don't need more quota. We don't need more bluefin. We need more quota. But it's been going on the past week. I stopped at a shop the other day. I watched probably in half hour, probably 50 or 60 flats of butterfish and sardines go out the door. The chunk is on. Joining us right now to talk this torrid chunk bite, how long it will last, we don't know, is Captain Alan Lee, buster of big eye, boss of bluefin, Yahweh of yellowfin, the tormentor of tiles, especially in the Hudson. He is here to talk chunks and maybe a little tip here or there on making it work. Captain Alan, how you doing, man?
Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Mooshin. Tell us the mooshin, your latest tale, man. I saw some photos, Al. Wow. You guys got it down, man.
Thanks, Tom. It's been a good season. The tuna chunk bite's really taken off over the last couple of weeks. And, in fact, I just got done washing my hands off from packing away some tuna that some clients left us from a recent trip. It's been really good. The yellowfin have really settled into our offshore areas, yep. And this is the time of the year that so many anglers wait for.
Alan, it's been, excuse me if I'm wrong, but from the reports I get, and you know my part-time employee, what I handle, it seems that they were at the Triple Rex, guys were out there, and they're not there. Then they were at the Atlantic Prince, then they were at the Texas Tower, up going towards Little League. They seem to be really, really moving. Is this... I don't remember it being this sporadic or this transient in the past few years.
Well, as you know, they do have fins, and they do move up and down that sort of 40-fathom line, so about 180 to 240-foot depths. And as a charter boat that's out there looking for them every day that we can, we keep our eyes open because the tuna are going to follow bait. They're going to follow different sea conditions, ocean conditions. So you're right. Some days it's been down towards the Triple Wrecks or the area sometimes people call the hills. Over the last week, we found them further northeast, even northeast of the Texas Tower. So most of our runs have been about 70 to 80 nautical miles every day. But at some point, we'll usually find them along that 40-fathom line.
Alan, sort of a bit of an non sequitur here, but I'll tell you... I haven't seen a white marlin bite like this in decades. That's a topic for another thing. But now, for example, quick anecdote. Very accomplished charter captain, good friend of mine, known him since he was a youngster. was out there, all the way out there by the, I guess, the triple wrecks with 30, 40, 50 other boats. Nothing. After a few hours, he said, come on, let's go in, try somewhere else. He said, we're coming in about not even a quarter of the way in from the area. He said, I saw a couple of chick birds. There was a whale. He said, then it was a little slick. Let's try it. He said, nothing for a half hour. He said, we were slinging chunks everywhere. All of a sudden, and you know the guy told me, I'll tell you up there who it is. He said, Tommy P, all of a sudden it was fucking mayhem. Mayhem. They went 1 for 7. He says, he didn't care. Everybody had a great time. Had a rod casualty, ba-boom, on the gunwale. But it was that crazy, that short, where, again, the day before, Al, they were all over the triple wrecks, and then, beep, gone.
Yeah, and yeah, for those listeners who run their own boat, I mean, I can't encourage you enough to keep your eyes open, be open to trying different spots. You know, so many people just go to the numbers that their friends gave them from the trip before, from 2 days before, which works sometimes, but it pays to have an open mind because, yep. Like, I think the person, you and I both know who that person was just talking about.
Yeah.
He found him out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
He had some of the best fishing, you know, you could find.
It doesn't take too much. The only thing that really gets this guy excited, besides that, is you talk about the biggest lobster you can find. But boy, he was, his eyes were, but he said, it was just great to see. He said, so I lost some equipment, big deal. He said, I got a charter for life now. The guys had a great time. But now, again, besides, you just, okay, you get out there, you have the cut butterfish, you have the sardines, you have the peanut butter, you just wing it out there. A lot more to chunking than just winging baits out, isn't there?
There absolutely is. Things like, you know, bait selection, tackle selection, getting the baits down to the right level. When we chunk, we, especially when we're first starting out in the day, we try to stagger the depths of our baits. So we try to get a couple of baits down around that 60 to 70 foot level. We keep some baits in that 30 to 40 foot level, and we keep some up high. We refer to as fly lining. By having some chunk baits, hook baits at different levels, it helps make sure we're covering the water column, maximizes our chances for success. So many other things, especially with tackle selection, especially this year. We see it every year at some point, but this year it seems to have happened earlier. The tuna seem to have all gone for LASIK eye surgery, and they came back with really, really good vision. And we know tuna have good eyesight to begin with, but this year already, hearing a lot of boats, and our experience too has been tuna have been line shy, leader shy. Great anglers using 50, 60 pound line leader, or even finding it hard to get bit. So we've been dropping down to, say, 40 pound fluorocarbon, smaller hooks and thin wire hooks. I know guys spend a lot of money buying those, and I'm not trying to diss anybody here, but they buy those super heavy duty tuna hooks, which could pick up a Volkswagen probably.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind, if you're fishing lighter line, lighter leader for tuna, you're only going to be using maybe 15, 16 pounds of drag pressure. You're not going to bend some of the regular standard hooks. Some of our favorite tuna hooks, especially when we got to drop down to light line conditions, the Gamagatsu octopus wire hooks.
Mm-hmm.
In a 3.0 or 5.0 size, we can really hide the hook in the bait. And we're using 40-pound fluorocarbon. A lot of times we're using longer shots of fluorocarbon leader also. So instead of a more traditional 6-foot leader, we might be using a 12 or 14-foot leader.
Wow.
And this is the kind of stuff that's really seeming to make a difference, because we'll be out there and we'll read the fish under the boat. We'll physically see the fish swimming right off the transom of the boat. You throw a hook bait with, say, 80-pound leader, and the tuna come up, they look at it, and they turn. You throw a hook bait out there at 40-pound fluorocarbon, and it gets inhaled by a tuna. So it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some secret special baits also make the difference, things like peanut butter.
You had the AI thing, too, right? Denise Marie says, what the hell is Captain Al mean by peanut butter? I said, hey, man, these tuna guys are really esoteric. I don't know. They try anything.
Right. You never know. Peanut bunker, if you can keep some live, that's great. I know some folks have been, especially now that the mullet run's been going on.
Oh.
I know a few Sharpies who have been sneaking out some live mullet.
Those corn cobs out there, man.
Snapper blues.
Mm-hmm.
Snapper blues are great. I back in the early 80s, I had one of my biggest yellowfin off of New Jersey. It's about 160 pounds that I got on a live line snapper bluefish. And so I love live lining snapper blues for tuna, if you could still find them.
Yeah, they're and all around. And some guys swear, a couple of captains, another great captains, swear by live spot. Live spot. Live spot.
Especially for guys that keep their boats down in like Barnegat Bay in South Jersey, you mm-hmm. get a lot more spot down there. I think they can catch and keep alive for bait. And these things are some of the things that make a difference between a good day and a great day.
Alan, the cadence that we're up against Hardbreaker, Captain. We're speaking Captain Alan Lee, Mooshin Sport Fishing. That Enrique, I look at that and I just go, oh, man, one of these days. And Dean Marie says, one of these days, you're almost 70 years old. One of these days. she gives me the line, that ship has sailed, babe. But now the cadence of the actual chunking exercise itself.
Uh-huh.
Whale and flail out there, a little bit here, a little bit there, mix it up, butters here, sardines port, butters, starboard. What's the dealio?
So when we're throwing chunks, so this is the chunks that are basically our chum to attract tuna. We throw a mix of chunk butterfish and peanut butter, peanut funker, and if we can find some spearing. And there's a super secret reason for this, because peanuts tend to float up high, and your chunk butterfish tend to drift down.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just throwing stuff sideways left and right, but the chunks that we're using for chum are drifting down at different rates. You got the peanuts up high, you got the chunks down low, and it makes for a much more impressive looking spread. When we're feeding hook baits back, we always tell our clients, we're going to work it back. You don't want to just have a bait that just, gets dead sticked. You know, will you catch a fish? Yeah, once in a while you can. But a dead stick bait where you're not feeding it back is just going to spin. It doesn't look natural. So we really encourage people to keep the rods and reels in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in free spool, pay the line back. So you're working your bait back at basically the same speed as your chunks, your chum line, is drifting back. And in fact, one of the tricks we do is after we fan a ladle or two of chunks off the side of the boat to try to attract the tuna, we toss our hook baits right into that same area.
There you go, yeah.
So you sort of get the shotgun effect of chunks that have no hooks, mm-hmm. and the tuna don't know that. And then you throw, a bait in there with a hook, and it just drifts right in there, and the tuna just come up. You'll see them, 4, 5, 8 tuna come up, start grabbing the chunks, and one of them will hopefully grab your hook bait.
What's the closest you've had a strike? Like right back in the
right
side?
Right next to it.
Right,
no. We'll get them 10 feet off the back of the boat.
Oh.
When they're boiling, they are literally going to take it's not an exaggeration to say we're hand-feeding them. We'll strip 8, 10, 12 feet of line, leave it on the gunwale of the boat, just toss the bait in, and you can pretty much just wait for it to hook up right behind the boat or right next to the boat.
There you go. Captain Alan Lee, Mooshin Sport Fishing. Captain Alan, how long, there's the capricious September into October weather patterns, how long can this chunk bite last?
It should last well into October, hopefully into November. There have been mm-hmm. some years we've had them up to Thanksgiving. Our biggest challenge here is weather.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, it tends to be windier this time of the year. For listeners who are thinking of going, if you haven't booked a trip, whether it's on a charter boat, a head boat, a friend's boat, try to get out there. Look for, get on someone's schedule and,
mm-hmm.
Hope for good weather. The head boats are generally less affected by wind than charter boats like us or smaller private boats. But this is the time. As long as the bait are in the area, you usually yep. have yellowfin hang out. You're also going to get more and more longfin as the temperatures, water temps drop.
I love the
longfin.
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been some nice catches of longfin. Yep. The big eye hang around a little bit longer. It's early in the early in the early summer, we have to wait for the water temps oftentimes bump up to like 73, 75 before the yellowfin move in. But in the fall, like this time of the year, September, October, the water temps can be 69 degrees. And the yellowfin, they don't really care because they've got all this squid, all this whiting out there, all kinds of food out there that they're just eating. And they don't really care about the water temperatures. They're more concerned about eating and getting fattened up. In fact, talk about whiting. We were fishing by some of the draggers the other day, and there's a lot of spillage of whiting. And
the little silver hake, right?
Silver hake, yeah. Yeah. Whiting we used to catch off of places like Long Branch
Pier. Long Branch Pier.
Yeah.
So, boy, Alan, are you as ancient as me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And so I went over and scooped up some whiting, and they came home for dinner with me, too. You know?
There you go.
Good stuff.
Captain Allen, we have to cut it short here. Give that website and Facebook page, please.
Yeah, Mushin, M-U-S-H-I-N, sportfishing.com. Search out on Facebook or Instagram. You'll see us, too. And always a pleasure to be on your show.
Captain, always an honor to have you. Listeners, this is the man. This is he is Captain Alan Lee. All those monikers I gave you before, they all stand true. Captain, how you take care. Best to Ray and the crew.
Thanks. All right. Have a good rest of the day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Captain Alan Lee rocks the house. A little long in that segment. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
College Football Saturday on ESPN Radio. Undefeateds clash in the Big Ten. Always! The top-ranked and 3-0 Ohio State Buckeyes head to Seattle to face 3-0 Washington.
It's College Football Saturday on 97.3 ESPN.
College Football Saturday, brought to you by First Bank of Sea Isle City.
Coverage begins at 3 p.m.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
That'll do it for this chapter of Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Get out and enjoy in the woods, on the water, a lot of stuff happening. Hey, try to check out that decoy show there in Tuckerton today and tomorrow. Going to be a great time. Don't forget, pick up the October issue of the Fisherman Magazine. Super, super, super issue in there. Really packed up. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. God spares. See you next Saturday.